Blog Talk Radio.
For a little bit of Rachet Live. Time to get groovy. We got Tad Taylor here as well, our executive producer, and Miss Lee Reed, our CEO in charge, the man with the plan, Mr. CJ Sports. It's the 110 Nation Sports. Rachet Live. All right, fans. How the hell y'all doing? It's another Tuesday night. That means it's another episode of Rachet Live. Glad to have y'all on board with us. We're going to go through a whole lot of nonsense and a whole lot of news in the next hour and 20 minutes. Glad to have my co-host, Advay. He's ready to jump on the mic here. But, of course, we've got to start out with my daily rant. Now, I want to bring something to attention, and we'll talk about it. So many times we believe that, it's an entertainment factor or whatnot. Look, I'm just going to lay it on the line. There's a lot of people that were upset with the way that this clash has been handled, and give it right, empty seats normally mean that it's a bad show. But all I've heard all week long is how bad the show was or whatnot. Well, guys, what was may not have been the greatest to be there for was actually really good on TV. And I think that there's that line that has to be drawn of what may not be a good spectator or spectacle doesn't necessarily give you the same return that it gives you from being at your living room watching a race. I understand that Fox probably didn't do a great job keeping an eye on the field. There was several times throughout the race I felt like they could have done more than just a two-car tandem, especially when you had a quarter-mile racetrack. But to hear the last several days of how the race stunk and it was just a spectacle, it wasn't a real race, really slaps the face of our local tracks throughout the nation that typically only have 22 cars show up for a main event on a quarter-mile racetrack. Why these guys felt like that was such a hard stance or wasn't as good of a show because of the track size of the track that they were on or anything to that, I beg to differ. I felt like that all in all, it was a really cool race. It was very nice to finally have a short track race that was watchable. Like, I've been waiting on the wing for the last 2 years with this new car to see a good short track race, and I feel like we might have found something here. Be it that we've had half of the cars on the racetrack, be it that it's a quarter mile, not a half mile. There's a lot of factors in this, but all in all, when we can say the what's said and done, we've seen tires being smoked and guys still making it through a corner. That's the testament of what this car is capable of doing and the show that it's capable of putting on. Typically, in any kind of race situation, when you smoke that left front, you're not going to be able to gain control of that car, and you're probably going to put it in the wall. Be it that it was low speed and be it that this car is built the way that it is, I felt like that there was a little bit of a cheater's graph there. Benny Hamlin obviously smoked his tires quite a few times, and it did not affect the way that the car was able to plan itself. So hopefully, when we go to one of these half-mile racetracks, we will get back our short-track experience that I believe most of us feel that we're, entitled to. Because obviously, in the last generation car, it was kind of a swip swap. Like, all of our mile-and-a-half speedways sucked, but go to Talladega or you go to a short track, and it's a great package. Now that the new cars come in, it's kind of been flipped the script, and we're trying to still figure out super speedway racing. We've got this little deal in with Atlanta being kind of in limbo. Is it a super speedway or not? But all in all, the short track package has been absolutely terrible. So if anything tonight that we can agree on, hopefully it will be that we are headed in the right direction with the short track package. Now, this does not give the fact that L.A. was basically a free event and we couldn't get but those few people into the stands. Be it the race was unprecedented, most people were going to be coming in from out of town the next day or that evening. So we don't really know what could have occurred in what I believe is to be our very last race at the Coliseum. Now, without further ado, I'll bring in my co-host, Mr. Tab freaking Tasmanian Devil Taylor. And, sir, how are you? Glad to have you here tonight.
Oh, Chris, it's Tuesday, and hey, I got my referee shirt buttoned up. I'm feeling a main event going down at the LA Coliseum. Yeah, the LA Coliseum. You know, the main event. We got one corner, the JGR driver, the number 54. They call him Gibby, Ty Gibbs, Mr. Sophomore Sensation. And then you got in the other corner, Mr. Veteran, out of the Penske Racing Camp, number 22, Joey Giggles Logano. They're going to have at it. Logano's whining and crying because he pushes people up the racetrack and he doesn't like it when it's returned. And Gibby gave him the nose and said, screw you. This is how I'm running. You run me this way, I'll run you back. Oh, boy. What a main event that little showdown was. And sadly, it happened off the air.
Yes, that's what, you know, we go back to. Even as great of a show as it was on the TV, there was so much that was missed. Along with the confrontations, there wasn't just the Ty Logano situation. There was also something going on between Stenhouse and another driver, and also Ross Chastain, I believe, his I Don't Give a Darn at tour continues forward. Obviously, he had gotten into a scuffle himself, along with Tyler Reddick pushing, wrecking his own teammate, maybe, Bubba Wallace, Giggles. Yeah, definitely, we have a lot to talk about here tonight.
Hey, Chris,
because of all the action that was a part of that race.
You know, one thing's for sure, though. He beat our favorite drivers.
let's talk about how that led up to, right? Because obviously we were supposed to race on Sunday. NASCAR did something unprecedented, Taz Taylor. I've called it before saying, why the hell don't we go ahead and run the race today when we know that there's rain tomorrow? And they've always said, impossible, it'll never happen, there's no way the logistics will work, plus the amount of money that NASCAR would lose. Look, NASCAR is going to lose money, right, in this race. They were going to lose money one way or the other. So what do? Do you stick around 3 days and pay for hotel rooms and the crew sticks around and then, you know, everybody's late for the to get back to the shops on a week where we're building up to the Daytona 500? You know, I believe that NASCAR unprecedentedly made the right call. We could still be, I think, in California tonight, waiting till tomorrow to race this race. If even tomorrow we would be able to get it in. So based off the fact, Taz Taylor, that NASCAR was probably going to have to cancel the event, where do you stand on the unprecedented call to go ahead and run this race on Saturday night?
So I feel like NASCAR was put in a lose-lose situation. They had to react with what was going on. If you think about it, a few months ago, or I should really say a month ago, they said that with this being a Saturday and Sunday event, they said Saturday would be no fans allowed, And Sunday would be, you know, the regular scheduled program with fans paying for tickets, this, that, blah, blah, blah. Well, NASCAR fans ranted. And then I want to say it was a combination of NASCAR plus the combination of the LA Coliseum getting involved. They pretty much said, look, the fans are not happy. They're missing out on a day of racing. They want it. We got to give it to them. So NASCAR responded saying, all right, Saturday is free and open to the public. We're letting fans in. So already right there, they're going to take a hit financially. And then fast forward to this weekend, they were put on the spot of dealing with rain. I mean, it's no surprise. NASCAR season, dealing with weather. Well, exactly. I mean, they were dealt with rain showers and storms that were obviously not in their control. Welcome to NASCAR. Welcome to racing season. Because you always have to play the game with Mother Nature.
If you have a drought in your area, Taz Taylor, if you have a drought in your area, the best thing to do is what? Book a NASCAR event.
Water. Yeah. Go to yeah, water. Grab any water you can. Anyway, so NASCAR was basically put in a situation of we run with what we can with the small little dry patch window we have, or we waste everybody's time with all this. And you know, in NASCAR's power, they can't sit there and say, well, our teams and drivers, they put in the time and the effort to not only in the money to not only come out here, but to put on something for the fans. I mean, especially when it's free. Saturday was free admission day anyway. So NASCAR was basically put in a situation of, do we run with the small window we have? Do we also pretty much give the boot to Mexico series because they're going out of their way and coming here? Or do we cancel everything because Sunday, Monday, and I think Tuesday tonight, weather-wise, was not looking good for them at all? And you can only do so much. So I think NASCAR was put in a very tough situation. And, yes, it was unprecedented. But I honestly believe they made the right call. They had to do something. They had to react. And they were only basically given one option. I know everybody says they were given two options. They could have canceled. Honestly, no, they couldn't have because, again, you have to favor your race teams and drivers, and also the Mexico series teams and drivers that took the time, the money, and effort to get to the Coliseum and put their cars on track. You also have to appease the fans because you did advertise free public admission on Saturday because the fans spoke up when NASCAR said no fans allowed originally.
Yeah, imagine the joke that would have been where they didn't have anybody and then all of a sudden they would have to come back and say, well, you know, we're going to race you guys. You know, thank goodness NASCAR made that call early. To go ahead and allow fans in for free. It seems to be that this plan was rushed, but in the end, Taz Taylor, it seems to be that it was the right plan.
They had to. Like I said, they were going to lose something regardless anyway. And they knew, and I'm pretty sure NASCAR knows, that regardless of whatever happened, they were going to lose out financially one way or another. And I think they would rather take the smaller financial hit of fans not coming in for Sunday, which basically refunds your tickets there. Look at it from this point. Would you rather take the hit in ratings – Would you rather take the hit in fans buying tickets and souvenirs and such? Or would you rather take the hit financially of race teams and drivers to go after you like, hey, we came all the way out here. We spent our team budget money in this net to, and you're going to screw us over?
As
they're
going to
take
Taylor.
The smaller hit.
Right. What are they arguing about right now? What is the holdup on the New Deal? The holdup on the New Deal is because of TV money, and they want more of it. As much as it's important to have fans in those stands, that's not what keeps racing alive. TV money is what keeps racing alive. Every other racing sport outside of NASCAR struggles to pay the bills because they don't get a $1 billion TV contract deal every single 10 years, right? They don't get $1 billion every year from TV networks. So it was most important to not lose your fan revenue, track revenue, and your TV revenue. So they did exactly what they had to do in order to make sure that those teams got a check cut for them coming out there. And one thing that sucks more than anything, Taz Taylor, is we only got qualifying for some of these guys. They were never given a chance. I don't know why NASCAR didn't just decide to go throw in a 30-lap non-qualifier, take two cars from non-qualifiers or something like that, and, you know, just race those other 13 cars in a 30-lap showdown. I don't know why they didn't decide to do that. I'm sure that they were pressed for time. But even at the beginning of the Mexico series, it's 8:30 L.A. time, and that's still fairly early for West Coast people.
Yes, but you also have to you have to think of it this way too. You have to kind of appease the East Coast side, but at the same time, how much of a dry window did they have? You know what I mean?
Right.
So, did they have really basically? I mean, you have to also think of the LA Coliseum. It's kind of like I know, Chris, you'll understand, but for fans that may not understand this, when you go to your typical weekly short track night, the best example I can come up with is Stafford Motor Speedway. How they do it is when it comes – heat races, they don't really do – they don't really worry about this part. It's the feature events. What they do is that for each division that's running their feature – they have their crews come out into the infield with limited supplies from their trailers. And once one division is done, not only are the drivers and cars coming off, but you got to take the crews off too so that the next division can put not only their cars and drivers, but also their pit crews as well. And the Coliseum, they have that deal. The cup drivers, the cup teams, have to go out and switch because you can only fit so many cars on the track at one time. So when you have the Cup Series done with their main event, everything Cup Series-wise has to come out of the playing field. And when the Mexico Series comes on, everything for the Mexico Series goes on to the playing field. So, and that's,
let me play devil's advocate. Yeah, definitely. Let me play devil's advocate real quick, Taz, because I think that this is an interesting subject that we have fallen upon. If you were given the choice before you watched the Mexico Series race, would you have said, NASCAR, forget about the Mexico Series race. I want to make sure that I get last chance qualifiers and heat races for the cup cars. How would you have voted, Taz? Would you have voted to watch the Mexico Series?
I personally
If it was your call, and you were basically given the choice, you can run last chance and heat and the cup cars, but we'll have to cancel the Mexico Series, and or we just run this consolidated event, and then we get the Mexico Series in as well. Before you watched that Mexico Series race, how would you have voted on that?
For me personally, if I were to run it, I think I would have to include the Mexico series into the equation, because that's that's a series that, and here's the reason why, because that is a series that not us typical American racing fans know about or have exposure to.
Right.
The Mexico series, this is new waters. They're trying to expand their series while the Cup Series is trying to expand themselves out, trying to grab new fans and stuff like that. Mexico Series is doing the same exact thing. This is a new market. This is a new fan base now, because we're going into a completely different country. And it's also being broadcasted on American television, on Fox.
Right.
I mean, granted, Fox Sports too, but it's a big thing. You have to include that in. And personally for me, I would keep the Mexico series and run a consolidated program. Yeah, I may have to take that hit on.
Go ahead.
Yeah.
No, go ahead.
I'll sit here and take the hit. I'll take the hit on some of the drivers not being able to run the main event, or do a qualifying heats and last chance qualifier. Because you have to. I'm trying to favor the Mexico series. They're going out of their way. They have to do. They're here for. They're trying to do the same thing that the Cup Series is doing. I'm all here for it.
As if I were the director, and I had to make the call, Taz, I would have chosen the names over the series. So I would have felt that it was more important to get the names of these drivers that we did know track time versus the Mexico series. And Taz Taylor, I'm telling you right now, I would have been completely wrong. I would have been completely wrong, because the amount of excitement and the badass racing that we've seen from the Mexico series was everything that we had hoped that our little class would have been like. Those guys, they put on the better show. I'm sorry. Hands down, the Mexico series put on a better show than the Cup cars. And so I would have never gotten to know that if I was the guy who made those decisions, because I would have believed that it was more important to put the names of the cars, the stars of the cars, out onto the racetrack versus people nobody knew. In the end, we found out a couple of names that we're going to have to keep our eye on, because those guys will hopefully figure a way or find a way to make it into the lower NASCAR series, which, you know, Suarez did not necessarily have that race won in the beginning, and had Garcia not ran into trouble, I'm just not sure if Garcia didn't have enough to keep Suarez from getting that victory. Now, it is bittersweet for Suarez, of course, because he did not make the main event over on the Cup Series side. For him to come in and win the Mexico Series and show them boys that there's a reason why he's a Cup Series driver and not them, you know, it was fitting. But all in all, I would have completely expedited the experience of the Mexico Series in lure that I'm going to put the names that I know fans relate to. And honestly, Taz Taylor, it would have been the worst decision that I've ever made. So I'm glad that NASCAR – look, I come out the door hammering Jim France, and I really believe what I believe, that he's outlived his time of promoting NASCAR. I believe Ben Kennedy and Lisa Kennedy are better suit for bringing NASCAR to the next level. For the fans that are coming up, you need a young mind to intrigue the young fans. The decisions made this weekend, I don't know who made those decisions, but I'll stand behind every single one that they made, because all in all, it was a good event. And the ratings, Taz Taylor, weren't that bad.
If not only the Cup Series, but the Mexico Series had a run, heats, LCQ type deal, at that point, I would pretty much say, look, Mexico Series, I know you're trying to do the same thing that the Cup Series is doing. However, we have to give something to the fans. And unfortunately for our market base, our television people, we have to do a full program for the Cup Series. If I was in that point, I'd be like, all right, we can work something out. Say next year we'll get you in, or maybe and when we go to Phoenix for championship weekend, we'll put you guys in on the Phoenix racetrack, to give you guys, to make up for it, that kind of thing. But being that, not both divisions had to, both series had to run heats, LCQ and all that, it worked out great with what NASCAR did. So I think NASCAR made the right decision on doing a limited deal, because they had to incorporate how can we please the Mexico series, the whole series, teams, officials, and stuff like that, but also appease the Cup Series fans, teams, and staff, and stuff like that. You had to look at it from that perspective, and that's how I personally would have looked at it, and I think NASCAR made the right decision, and we've all said this. This is all unprecedented. NASCAR was put in a lose-lose situation. They had to make it they had to make a tough choice, and it was just basically of what's best for everybody involved, what's best for our fans, and what's best for the scenario we're dealt with.
Right, and look, nobody could have suspected coming out the door we would have Logano versus Gibbs, Chastain versus Reddick, Stenhouse versus John Hunter Nemechek. These are feuds that did not just start this week, right? These are ongoing feuds that you would have thought during the winter had the spark had, burned out. But instead, no, they're still upset about things that happened last year, maybe 2 years ago. And this is going to benefit the fans. The one thing that we've lacked over so long was rivalries, and now we may have multiple rivalries. We may have multiple drivers who literally – Ty Gibbs took no breather to basically throw Joey Logano under the bus and say, yeah, I mean, this is how we're going to race each other, and I'm not going to give in to this guy. It is kind of odd when you can admit that you wrecked somebody purposely. I'm still confused on how all that will typically go down. But the best thing to do for now is just deny it in your interview. So I may have been a little bit cocky there in that interview after the race. But the sad thing is there was never, this whole deal is to get people involved in it, and then Fox cuts its cameras. Just immediately after the race with hardly any interviews. With that being said, and the rivalries that have already heated up and it's already started, let's get back to what we are wanting next for the Clash, because I believe that the L.A. Coliseum is not going to renew for the next 3 years. I believe we're going to have to go somewhere different. There was a poll given, I believe, by Kyle Busch actually created this poll, where it basically showed it was four choices, and 65% of the fans wanted to go back to Daytona for the Clash. Now, we've argued the fact that, it's a good marketing strategy to open the season up in Daytona. Speed Weeks is important. Let's hammer that down. Let's get as much promotion going on about Daytona and the Daytona 500 coming up the week after the Super Bowl. Like, hey, you got a big event this week. It's called the Super Bowl, where 80 million people are going to watch. But we need about 5 million of y'all to tune into the Daytona 500 coming up next Sunday. In order to do that, it seems like the perfect way to do it would be to have the Daytona Speed Weeks as we used to. But let's go ahead and not argue that here tonight. Let's open the diamond up. Let's find another place in another huge market where NASCAR can basically advertise themselves in between the Super Bowl at a place that would hold this style of event. Now, we have the Dirt in December. It's, you know, if you don't know what the Dirt in December is, it's where the late model cars and modifieds go up and race at the Dome in St. Louis. It's a cool race. It's a quarter-mile track, just similar to what we see at the Coliseum. It's indoors. It's not. It's at the Dome in St. Louis, so it's not a retractable roof. But let's keep that in an open mind. Taz Taylor, if you were to pick anywhere on the map to go in a big market that you think would entice fans who would typically not go to a race or be a part of the race car culture, where would you point to the map where you would go to try to lure in the next new race fans in a dome stadium type setting?
All right. So, where I was going with it was not a dome stadium type of setting.
It doesn't have to be, Chaz. It doesn't have to be. I'm just throwing that out there. I want you to be creative here.
Okay.
What your thoughts are.
All right. So I have, now that I think about it, I have two options. One is a not dome stadium type of thing, and two, and the other option is a stadium dome type of deal. So for me personally, I would go with option number one. I'll keep that on the, I'll say that later because I want to explain option number two first. My option number two would be, now keep in mind, I am thinking, how can I help save teams on travel costs? Because I feel like going from the East Coast, where East Coast, Carolinas primarily, are where most of these race teams are starting their journeys from. So you have to think, they have to go from East Coast all the way to the West Coast to L.A., and then have to go back to the East Coast because they have to go back to their home bases before they go travel down south to Florida for Daytona. After Daytona, a week prior, they're back on the west side of the country. So at that point, you're not really saving teams financially any money traveling-wise. So how can I eliminate that? Simple. We stay on the East Coast. My option number two, which was a stadium dome option, would be going to a big NASCAR market already and expand upon it. And you can also do cross promotion with the NFL. You're going to Mercedes-Benz Stadium in Atlanta, Georgia.
What? I like your way of thinking. There's already a market there. You don't have to go far from Charlotte. That seems like it was well thought out, Taz Taylor. I'll give you that one. Now, let's go to option one real quick. That's a,
option one?
I mean, look, Mercedes is a state-of-the-art facility and can handle a whole lot. It's got a retractable roof, so it doesn't matter if it's raining. The best thing to do is probably keep it half open. Now, whether or not they could get a track built there in time, especially based off of if the Falcons made the playoffs, that's a question. But we're not here to answer that kind of shit right now. What we want to make sure is,
and also Chris, you also think of the time we're in right now. NASCAR's trying to think of going electric, right? Mercedes,
right.
I think, kind of falls into that electric car type of deal. So in a way, I feel like this could be a door opener for NASCAR if they're looking for, say, another manufacturer to pop in with the next gen, or if NASCAR, you know, gets running with the electric car deal, Mercedes would open the door for that. So you're doing cross promotion plus window of opportunities here.
Now,
for my option number one. It's in a big NASCAR market. Again, you're still on the East Coast. You are saving probably at least 90% of the team's financial costs for traveling, because they're not really going that far. And that, my friend, is the resurrected, pretty much newly repaved North Wilkesboro Speedway.
Oh, still, but that's going to be the all-star. And you never know the weather.
That's where I'm going to pause you. Because, Chris, if NASCAR can work out a deal with the L.A. Coliseum for, say, a long-term deal, I would say put the All-Star race at the L.A. Coliseum. I want to see bumpers banging, doors going side by side, drivers' tempers flaring when there's a big, old, fat $1 million paycheck on the line versus a clash that doesn't really matter.
Right. So you're saying switch them up?
Yes.
Okay. Now I can go with that. I can see this, but the weather would be a major factor in the North Carolina area for the February event, and that would be something that would have to be taken into consideration, Tess. But mine originally, of course, this is what I was dreaming today, that the Clash was in March and not February. Then I would dream for the Clash to be at Yankee Stadium. Unfortunately, I have to come into an agreement that February is not necessarily the best month. Well, look at the market. Look at the market that Yankee Stadium. Just think about a race being in Yankee Stadium. It's the house that Ruth built.
Chris,
it's the house that Aaron Judge is building.
Chris, can I ask you something? What were you drinking or what were you smoking when you thought of this? Because February in up northeast does not mix very well.
No.
Nope.
So
tell
let
you this.
Me
we
tell
get
you,
four
let me tell you my second choice.
We get four seasons
let
in
me
one
tell
week.
You my second choice. Which I said in a dream world, I would like Yankee Stadium. But let's get back to reality. MetLife Stadium. Why? Because you're still in the big market. You have two major football teams that have played in that stadium. It's iconic on the Jersey Shore. It literally is the geographic. It's in the perfect geographic zone to pull fans from Pennsylvania, Rhode Island, Vermont. I mean, anywhere in the northeastern region to come into that race. Now, my second choice would be far out in left field. But why the hell don't we have a racetrack in Hawaii? Let's go to Hawaii. Let's go to where they play the Pro Bowl, where they used to go play the Pro Bowl. Let's build a track there. Let's ship all the cars overseas. Because, hell, there's nothing better than watching a sandy beach on a small island with race cars that have never been there before, right? Let's go to a land that we've never been before. Let's go to Hawaii. Let's get the Samoans and all the Hawaiians on board and create a new fan base within the most beautiful islands in the United States. It's not a perfect world. It'll probably never happen. But at the same time, how cool would it be instead of sending our cars to Brazil or Australia or Japan, let's send them to America. Let's send them to Hawaii. So MetLife or Hawaii would be my two places of choice if I could dictate where and when the Clash could be run.
As much as I want to get behind your Yankee Stadium and your MetLife Stadium ideas, I hate to tell you, around February, March timeframe in the Northeast, into a stadium that has no roof, mind you, is not the best. And I know this is going to come back on this, like, oh, WWE had WrestleMania at MetLife Stadium. Well, when they had WrestleMania, it was more of a decent, you know, we're kind of out of winter into early spring type of weather. The Clash is being held, with where the Clash is being held, unfortunately, up here in the Northeast, especially in New York, well, specifically New York City, New Jersey, metropolitan area, that kind of weather does not go over very well. I mean, like I said, like to experience...
You're right.
We experience four seasons in a week, more 9 times out of 10.
we can experience that in one day, my friend, here in Mississippi. So I guess all in all, since I didn't really think about MetLife not having a retractable roof, I'll put that out there. I did. I messed up on that one. I guess let's just send them on home to the Dallas Cowboys and let old Jerry Jones get one more thing that he can see in that great big old Taj Mahal of Cowboy Stadium.
I mean, Texas does have a NASCAR market because you have the Texas Motor Speedway and you have Circuit of the Americas. And Circuit of the Americas not only has NASCAR, but Formula One, IndyCar, I think, goes there too, or at least they used to.
Where, in Texas?
Yeah, Circuit of the Americas. I think IndyCar does Texas Motors. But I'm not sure about Circuit of the Americas.
No, they don't do. They do not do. That's just Formula One and NASCAR that go there. But NASCAR's tore up the track so bad, I believe Formula One doesn't want to go there anymore. So we've covered a lot about the Clash, Taz Taylor. We got to move on. We're pressed on time. Let's talk about Denny Hamlin. Let's talk about Denny Hamlin's quick win. Obviously, I don't know if you've watched the Netflix series, but a lot of the Netflix series kind of portrayed Denny Hamlin as a villain. Obviously, after winning the race, he was faced with cheers and then immediately thereafter boos. And I'm not talking about booze to drink. I'm talking about booze like Kyle Busch booze. Denny Hamlin wearing the black hat. How does that work for him? Obviously, we said last week that in an argument that basically, the villain is the guy who everybody should really like. Like Denny Hamlin is from North Carolina. He's a Virginia boy, I believe. So he's an Appalachian guy. He's, obviously one of the hardest workers in NASCAR. He's got 50-plus wins, which is, there's very few people on the list once you get to 50, right? That list gets very small on who's in front of him. I think he's probably in the top 10 or so in wins. He's like Mark Martin, he's never won a championship. Now, Martin never won a Daytona 500 either. Denny Hamlin's got 3 Daytona 500 championship rings in his on his hand. At what point did Denny Hamlin become the villain, Taz Taylor? Because obviously with the booze, he is today's villain.
So I think I know the primary reason why he became the villain, and this is why I said last week he became the villain for the wrong reasons. It's something to go back on Denny's personal life. Something to do with, I think something to do with like him cheating on. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes, I think that's where it all started, and like I said, like I get on a personal level why people would hate him, but I feel like when you go to the racetrack and you want to boo a driver, you want to boo them for the right reasons, not the wrong. And like I said, I want to boo a driver not because of their personal life or whatever. I want to boo a driver because I can't stand seeing them, or I hate to be, or like I'm a fan of this guy, but he lets me down every single time. And I know that kind of scratches heads a little bit because I know fans are fans of drivers kind of like Minnesota, like say for NFL. I heard this reference last week on a podcast on YouTube, be a Minnesota Vikings fan where, you know, you have high hopes, high expectations, and they always end up letting you down. And they compared the Minnesota Vikings to Alex Bowman in a way, because Alex Bowman is kind of like that. But I just feel like Denny Hamlin, but I feel like Bowman has so many years left that I don't feel like Bowman is a great comparison to that. I feel like Denny Hamlin is the best comparison. I mean, at this point, if we're comparing Denny Hamlin to any, say, like sports team or sports franchise, we can go to basically today's day and age. I would say Denny Hamlin in comparison is a great comparison to today's day and age, modern era Dallas Cowboys. They always sit there and say, oh, this is our year, this is our year, this is our year. When push comes to shove, when things really matter most, it's where the choke starts happening. And fans
Brian
are let down.
Taylor just compared Denny Hamlin's career to the Dallas Cowboys, who are, by definition, America's team, and they haven't even won but three playoff games since 1993, their last championship. So basically, if Denny Hamlin, what Taz Taylor has just said is, if Denny Hamlin was a franchise, if he was like any other ball club, he would be most like the Dallas Cowboys. How fitting is that? That's beautiful.
Oh, I heard that reference and I sat back and I looked at it. And I'm like, it's so true because, as you mentioned, Chris, since 1993. What have the Dallas Cowboys done? Have they made the playoffs for a few years, but have they gone anywhere? No. Who is pretty much like that? Denny Hamlin. I mean, I will say this. Denny Hamlin in recent years has done something that the Dallas Cowboys have not in recent years, and that's make it to the championship finale.
No.
But, again, I mean, I feel like Denny Hamlin is just one of those, like, hated drivers. I think because of that reason, he just has that charisma, that pretty much let down of, this is our year, this is our year, this is our year. Everyone gives them great reports all season long. Now when it comes time for crunch to move on to the championship, to get that championship crown, that's where the choke starts coming in. And I think at this point, fans are pretty much kind of sick and tired of it. So, I mean, at that point, I can understand why you want to hate him. Why you want to boo him. However, I'm going to backtrack this one here, Chris, because if you look at the last 2 years that the LA Clash the Clash at the Coliseum has happened, the winner of that race has either won the Cup Series championship or won the regular season championship. Joey Logano won the first LA Coliseum Clash and went on to win the Cup Series championship. Martin Truex won the Clash last year at the Coliseum, won the regular season championship. If we can follow conspiracy theory, which one of the two championships will Denny Hamlin snag? I mean, I pretty much feel confident that he'll win the regular season championship. But if he doesn't win that, then he's got to keep going with getting this Cup Series championship. That's starting to look like it ain't happening.
All chips need to be on board at JGR to make sure that Denny Hamlin does not leave that organization without a championship. And, you know, it is. It's an hourglass that's running out of time, running out of sand. You know, eventually Denny's going to either have to make a move or his seat's going to be, you know, his seat's going to run out. I mean, that's just the way that racing is. The only way that he will dictate his own retirement is if he has those arrangements made beforehand, and he does. He has 2311. Whether or not we ever see Denny Hamlin race for that race team, it's, you know, it's it could be, it could happen, right? It could happen. Is it likely to happen? I don't think so. I think it's likely that he retires as a JGR driver, because I just don't really expect to see him go beyond another three-year period. So we could see him definitely as, first of all, Denny Hamlin has never been the head honcho at the shop, right? He's always been, you know, behind the Kyle Busch or behind, you know, basically Kyle Busch, but there's been other lead drivers there. So Denny Hamlin's kind of spent most of his career in the shadow. He will relish the fact that he is kind of the head honcho there at JGR Racing, and I think that that'll give him another 2 to 3 years on his contract. Now, he's got that small window to accomplish what he's not been able to do as of now. Now that we're talking about seats and all, I would like to transition into, you know, a major topic going into 2024, and that's, of course, silly season. And we don't start silly season at Race Chat Live in September. We don't start silly season talk at Race Chat Live in July. We don't start silly season talk in May. We start silly season talk right now. Cass Taylor, there's a few drivers that need to put up or shut up, and I believe one of those drivers would be Austin Cindric. I believe another one of those drivers would probably be Harrison Burton. I believe Todd Gillian may be on that list as well. Taz, let's kind of dive into that real quick. Who, but even if the, you know, it's the names I've already mentioned, who do you believe is on the hottest seat right now in NASCAR, and tell me the reason why?
So, personally, so I'm kind of looking over the team driver list or whatever, and the first one that came up was Hendrick Motorsports. I think 3 out of the 4, in my personal opinion, are guaranteed safe. The fourth one, to me, in my opinion, I don't think is safe. I mean, I think what's keeping him is sponsorship dollars. That driver being Alex Bowman. If I were Hendrick, I would be concerned in the sense of, can you stay healthy for a full season? I mean, if you look back on it in the last couple of years, he raced a sprint car and broke part of his back and had to miss out some races. I don't think 2022, but in 2021, I think he had something happen to miss a race or two. So my concern would for that team, honestly, would be Alex Bowman. If I were him, I would say this is for me. I would say Alex Bowman is on the hot seat. Do I think he's the hottest seat right now? No. I would say Austin Dillon out of the RCR camp, but he's got grandpa's money and everything else, so that's never going to happen. I feel like looking at the current drivers list, I feel like Harrison Burton probably is, and if it's not him that's on the hottest seat of them all, I would say it's going to be either Todd Gilliland or Daniel Suarez. And I know,
whoa,
Chris, you're going to be shocked. I know
amigo,
you're shocked on Suarez.
Mi amigo, andale, andale, andale. No, 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 amigo.
I know you're shocked on Suarez, but this is why I say Suarez. Look at what Trackhouse has done in the offseason. They signed Shane Van Gisbergen.
to a special contract where basically he's running whatever races he is with Trackhouse. He's under contract with Trackhouse. He's going to run trucks, Xfinity, and select cup races. Originally not on a full-time schedule up until Trackhouse and Colleague worked out a deal where SVG is running full-time for Colleague in the Xfinity series. And then, so you have that going for you. Then you also have what Trackhouse has also done. They also pulled in a driver who's out on loan. For those of you sports terminology people that understand this, who's out on loan. He's under contract with Trackhouse, but he's out on loan with Spire Motorsports, and that's Zane Smith. So to me, I feel like Suarez is kind of on the hot seat because you have two hungry drivers that are under contract with the same team, but they're on loan somewhere else. Because Trackhouse doesn't really have another car to fill the seat or Trackhouse Racing themselves. So I feel like Suarez is kind of on that hot seat there. Gilliland, I feel like, is on the hot seat too, being that, I mean, if you look at it, what was it, last year or the year before, where he raced, or after like two or three races, Front Row Motorsports told him, look, you don't have the full finances to run the full season. We're cutting you back by like eight races. And who took that nod? Zane Smith, a Front Row Motorsports development driver. Or truck series driver, I should say. So this is kind of where I feel like Gilliland's kind of on a hot seat, but I think Suarez is more on a hotter seat because Gilliland, Gilliland only has one driver to worry about. If Front Row keeps with their own drivers, and Front Row's newest truck series driver, I don't think he will not be fully ready for Cup. He won't even come close. Unless he has like a star-studded year in truck series, it ain't going to happen. So I have to look at it that way in terms of what do teams have for development drivers or possible openings. And I feel like Trackhouse is that one team that has drivers ready to go or ready to come up, but you have no room to put them. And when you do have room to put them, they're going to replace somebody. And I think Suarez fits that jello mold.
And if I were to pick one, Taz Taylor, I would have to go, you know, you blew me out of the water. I figured you would go with Alex Bowman. I really did. Based off the previous history that we've had with Alex Bowman and how we've talked about him, and we've always known that he's kind of the odd man out. At Hendrick Motorsports, knowing that his contract year is up at the end of the season, I feel like probably Alex Bowman would have been the one that you chose. But Nathaniel Suarez makes a lot of sense because, let me tell you something, Trackhouse is making moves, and you're either on the bus or you're getting left. And if Nathaniel Suarez doesn't piece together some solid finishes, definitely there are some names knocking on the door to get into that facility there at Trackhouse. Now, I feel like if you're in the legendary camp of Penske Racing, and you're not only in that legendary camp, but you're also in the legendary seat of the two car, and you're not performing, they're going to have to make a move fast. And so Austin Cindric is the man on the board for me right now, because Austin Cindric has done absolutely nothing since winning the Daytona 500. As a matter of fact, last season was partially dismal throughout the whole year. Now, this is a guy that we thought would be wonderful at road course races and really has just not been able to piece much together in that number two ride. Number two is Penske's main car. That is the fixture of Penske Racing, is that number two machine. Where Austin Cindric sits today, he's going to really have to pick up the pace if he expects to be Penske material. I mean, you know, we'll get, how about pulling out an old Seinfeld reference? Are you Penske material? You know, I'm just not sure. Only some of my older fans will kind of get the Seinfeld reference there. But
I like where you're going with this. I like where you were heading with the Cindric deal. It's just, I know my mindset was pretty much like, all right, let's look at, like, I thought of it as like a major league, minor league type system. Let's say Major League Baseball or NBA are the best prime examples. And I know MLS soccer does kind of the same thing. You have a player, like, I know baseball, I'm not the best with player names, so I'm just going to throw out a name like Derek Jeter, for example. Say if he was still playing for the New York Yankees. You know Derek Jeter is the caliber player that will play in the Yankees roster anytime, any day of the week. However, say if he gets injured or something happens where he goes on loan, or Yankees say, look, we want you to be healthy and come play with us, but for your best development or on your road to recovery, we're going to loan you to another team, do your rehab system type deal. And that's where I kind of had to go with this. Penske doesn't have that. They don't have an Xfinity team. They don't have a truck team to fall with. And I know Trackhouse does not have that either. But with the deals Trackhouse has made, they pretty much saw it as like, well, we don't have an Xfinity. We don't have a truck team. But we'll work with people that may have a seat. We'll put our drivers with them and do some kind of partnership, and that's where Trackhouse worked out a deal with Spire and Colleague to send their development drivers in a spot to, I guess you could say in this case, do their rehab system or their development assignment.
Well, you know, Austin Cindric, of course, his father, Tom Cindric, runs the IndyCar side of operations. I think he's the president of operations there at Penske Racing. And similar to Cole Custer, you know, there's family in the house, but we've seen quickly Stuart Haas Racing. That's not what saved Cole Custer. Cole Custer still got sent back to the minors in that reference. You know, Austin Cindric definitely has to put his foot forward, because there's going to be a lot of names out there that are going to hit free agency, and wouldn't be surprised if some of these deals weren't already cooked up or ready to sign, you know, as soon as they're able to. Obviously, there's only a couple of agencies that run NASCAR, and I'm sure that they work feverishly together to make sure that all the ducks are in a row for the moment that they are able to ink deals. Whether or not those are tampering situations or not, I'm not really sure how any of that is guarded, being that there is absolutely no union in NASCAR. So I guess tampering can be argued in the court of law, probably. It's nothing wrong with two people sitting down asking where we can go with this. So that number two machine being the house car at Penske, I feel like, you know, somebody's got to make that move. And I'm not sure if that's a rookie. At this point in time, if Austin Cindric doesn't work out, I believe that they would probably bring in a driver from another organization, possibly an Alex Bowman, possibly a Eric Jones type driver. So it's going to be interesting to see how Penske does that. There's no mediocrity at Penske. That is the one thing that Roger Penske's always done. He's made sure he's got the best of the talent. So I just don't see them holding to make a move on Cindric just because his daddy works at the facility. They, you know, whether or not they send him over to Wood Brothers to give him a second chance if Harrison Burton doesn't work out or whatnot. Harrison Burton, another, you know, guy on the radar there. Is he cut material? Is he Penske material? I don't really think so. But there again, I would have argued Ryan Blaney before Talladega in October. I mean, literally the day of Talladega, sitting in the bleachers, I said to my wife, this guy Ryan Blaney, he really pisses me off because they treat him like he's a damn superstar and he ain't ever won anything. And then the guy goes off in this magnificent run and wins a championship. So, you know, I have a way of open mouth and start foot with that. Now, Ryan Blaney's not going to have to worry about his ride, neither will Joey Logano. Eventually, Penske will probably move on from one of these guys. It would probably be Joey Logano next. But right now, we just want to rebuild Penske back to the powerhouse that it is. And I don't believe Austin Cindric's name on the side of that hauler is going to be there if we don't see a change very soon in his style of racing. We have to see an improvement there. You know, that's kind of where we are at, Ted Taylor. I'm not sure if there's something that we've left, a topic that we may have skipped over. Of course, Kevin Harvick has announced his return to full-time competition in the Cars series. So, Kevin Harvick in the booth, I think he did a great job. What do you think after with him and Clint Bowyer in the booth? Together with Mike Joy, that's going to be our crew. Was it good?
I thought Harvick did pretty well. I think with Harvick having the limited cast stuff that he's done with, like throughout like the Xfinity series races and stuff like that in the last few years. Helped him prep for this kind of role he's stepping into now on a full-time basis. The one thing I do like, I think Kevin Harvick, I like him as the third person. I like him better than Jeff Gordon, in my opinion, because I felt like Jeff Gordon was kind of more bland. And I'm not saying I don't like Jeff Gordon entirely. I just thought Jeff Gordon as a broadcaster was kind of more bland. Yeah, he had the mentality and the knowledge of race cars and how they work and this and that, blah, blah, blah. And he fed off of Mike Joy relatively well. If there was a third person that had, like, that sense of humor, like that DW colorful flavor, I guess you can say, Jeff Gordon didn't really make that connection very well. He tried. I just don't think it worked out well. And then when Clint Bowyer came in to be that colorful guy, you know, to kind of, I guess you can say, replace Harvick. Or not Harvick, replace DW. It worked, but having Bowyer and Joy just didn't really mesh, so they needed a permanent middle guy, and Harvick was the perfect guy. I think he is the perfect guy. He knows when to be serious and connect with Mike Joy, with the lead commentator, but he can also connect very well and thoroughly with the colorful aspect with Clint Bowyer. And also Harvick is a perfect guy to have in there too with the next-gen cars. Harvick has ran the next-gen cars not only for two seasons, so he knows these cars more than Clint Bowyer, or when they brought in a special guest person like Tony Stewart or Danica Patrick or Kenny Wallace, you know?
Right.
So I feel like Harvick, Fox nailed the broadcast team on the dot, and I feel like Fox Broadcasting, when it comes to camera angles and camera work, that still has some work there. But in terms of the commentary team, they got it. I think they nailed it.
All right. Well, we're going to end it with this last question. It's pretty simple. Of course, poll qualifying, I think, will be up on possibly Tuesday. That would be the day. I haven't really looked at the schedule yet. I do believe that they will be running qualifying before we come back Who is your early favorite? Will Hendricks. I guess the question is, will Hendricks score another pole for the Daytona 500? I think this is 5-6 years in a row.
I don't know. I wouldn't be surprised if Hendrick gets on the front row some way, shape, or form, but I just don't know what's the driver's storyline. Let's put it that way. Hendrick, yeah, has that, but who else does? I don't think there's really one that sticks out like a sore thumb, like in years past.
Right. Well, I think the Fords are going to give them a run for their money. Obviously, the new design noses, but, you know, Toyota has showed up in numbers. Could we see a swing for the fences? Could we see a real trimmed-down race team? No team out there is better at trimming things down than a lower-budget race team, right? Because they ain't got all the stuff to put on there anyway. So maybe we will see possibly a legacy from – front row starter, possibly an Eric Jones, or could be John Hunter Nemechek even, or maybe Jimmy Johnson. Who would like to see Jimmy Johnson on the pole for the Daytona 500? I think that would be cooler than just about any other possibilities that could happen. Now, hey, I love it because we're going to roll into race week, and the impossibles happen, quite honestly. They happen often at Daytona. Or a place like that. So, you know, we've got to gear in, put our seatbelts on, put our goggles on, and hope for an entertaining event. But the likelihood that Hendrick comes out and sits on the pole again, when you got drivers like Kyle Larson, William Byron, and Chase Elliott, along with Alex Bowman, especially Alex Bowman. Bowman is really good at super speedway. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see. I'm ready to see another team on that top spot. You know, we'll have to run qualifying to find out. We'll be able to make our picks next week, Taz Taylor, of course. We'll have all the stuff ironed out for the game that we play here and whatnot. So we're looking forward to that. Anything else before we close, Taz Taylor? Did we miss anything?
No, I don't think we did. And to touch on the part with the pool, be on the lookout for the rest of the week as long as I don't get put in Facebook jail like the nonsense last week for stupid reasons. But, yeah, look out for that in the next, I would say starting tomorrow. We'll be pushing for newer people. I think of the 14 we had last year, I think 12 are returning. But, yeah, well, and I know there's new recruits knocking on the door to come in. So, yeah, we'll look forward to that. And I think we're good to sign off here, Chris.
All right, man. Well, race fans, we want to thank you guys for giving us the time here tonight. Of course, we went over just a few minutes. They're not too bad. But we did, you know, go over just a tad bit. But, you know, the biggest thing, Taz Taylor, is you know, checking out the podcast. You can not only just find Race Chat Live there on the podcast, but you can find other shows such as the 110 Nation Sports Show, obviously The Closer, which is a new show that's been added here to the network. Race Chat Live on Tuesday nights. The Closer airs on Sunday nights. The 110 Nation Sports Show airs on Monday nights, and we will be bringing back the
Wednesday, Chris.
Racing show Wednesday, yeah, but I'm trying to take the Racing for Success with Jared Hudson. So looking forward to having them back on the menu as well. You can find our show on many, many different platforms, including YouTube, as long as we don't have any infractions from me playing idiot music that that has copyrights in it. You can also find us on iHeartRadio, of course, Apple Podcasts, my favorite, Spotify. You can find us on Spotify. You can find us on Google Podcasts. So if basically if they make a podcast platform, we are probably on it. Spreaker, I believe is what it's called, as well. So you can find us just about anywhere. Look up Race Chat Live, and you should be able to access our shows. Of course, you can listen to us live as we broadcast on Tuesday night, but that's up to you guys. Of course, we want you to listen to it. And you can find our shorts throughout the week. Thank you, Mr. CJ Sports, for coming up with our shorts. Of course, those shorts are just tidbits, pieces broken off from the show, put into another platform style so that you don't have to listen to the whole show. You can just find some of the funny parts throughout the show. I guarantee you, we will make you laugh at least once or twice every Tuesday night here on Race Chat Live. We try to do it. We try to be suspenseful. We try to keep things rolling. We try to bring a new attitude to the style of racing that we have. So I hope that you guys enjoyed it. And Taz Taylor, I guess we'll let you end it.
All right, folks, thank you for listening along to Race Chat Live here on Tuesday night. Make sure to tune in next Tuesday night as we preview the Daytona 500 Speed Weeks. 8:30 p.m. Eastern is when we start live. As Chris said, make sure you follow us, or if you don't listen to us live, check us out on our YouTube channel, the 110 Nation Sports YouTube channel, or check us out on any forms of podcasts like Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and stuff like that. Again, tune in next Tuesday night, 8:30 p.m. Eastern. And this has been the Caution Flag of Racing Radio, Chris Crane. I'm the Tasmanian Devil Flaggers, Taz Taylor, saying good night. We'll see you all next week.
Good night.
Okay.